20,000 feet up, breaking all the lights on the doors. And I ain't seen no ceilings. We came in through the top floor. Three R's rip right round your jugular.
You're listening to Feminist Killjoys, PhD, and our Feminism, Pop Culture, and Politics, as discussed by two professional Killjoys. I'm Melody, and Rachel and I are away from each other this week because she was spending a luxurious weekend in Vermont, and so it is just me controlling the dial this week, although we did record love letters to each other, and so we will play those. And then we are going to feature the extended version of David Frank's interview that I did with him a couple weeks ago on yoga. A lot of it actually got cut out to allow for Rachel to respond. And so we're going to include this week some of what you heard in the previous interview, but a lot of kind of in-depth yoga conversations. And so if you're a yogi or interested in yoga, you will find this interview interesting. And even if you're not into yoga, I talk a lot about social justice and accessibility within the yoga community. And so those issues, if they are important to you, you know, you can see how they map on to yoga, which has obviously been a very whitewashed practice here in the United States. Without further ado, we will transition into our love letters. Have a happy Valentine's Day if you're into that kind of thing. If you're not, that's cool too. And do not worry, we will be back next week to talk about all things Grammys. We watched, we tweeted, and we have lots of things to say. And so we will definitely discuss that next week, plus more. Until then, WTF power. All right, so hi, this is Melody speaking. I did not listen to Rachel's letter to me yet, so I have no idea what she is going to say or did say. And I'm like now dreading that I like came up with this idea because I hate being vulnerable and I thought it was a good idea at one point. And now I'm like, oh my God, I have to do this. The pitch was for us to just kind of talk about what we like and love about each other. And there is many things that I adore and appreciate about Rachel. But I think the part of our friendship that has made me grow the most is the ways in which we are completely different. And I think at some points, I mean, we started referring to each other as sisters at some point. I can't remember when, but I think some of it is because even though we have these like pretty intense differences and we've had fights that are intense, we still really love each other. And I think, you know, unconditional love is like beyond just a friend. It's not really about what I like about her as a friend, but more as like a sister. You know, I think she's really pushed me on all things feminism, and that's kind of where our core arguments lie, but it makes me appreciate her viewpoint more than I would if I didn't have somebody like her in my life. And she's extremely intelligent and always challenges me to become more intelligent myself, just to like keep up with her brain. I also like how lovey-dovey she is. I'm not. And I guess in some ways she isn't either, but like when it comes to like her romantic relationship, she goes like all in. And I just, I'm not like that. And so it's just really fascinating to hear her go all in with her relationships and hear about her struggles and just being a romantic, which I'm just not. And so it's been really interesting to, you know, learn about what it's like to be a romantic and the things that you think about. And obviously I love her politics. And even though we're both very radical, our politics don't always align and we disagree on a lot of things, which I appreciate again, because I don't think it's really fun to have a friend that is just like you, because then it's like you live in an echo chamber, which in some ways we live in an echo chamber together, but in a lot of ways we don't. And we challenge each other and make each other uncomfortable. And I also really admire the way that she identifies as queer, which kind of helped me come to that identification, and how she's kind of unapologetically queer and working class. Just her identification with those two cultures is so strong and has really made me think more about my positionality, but also my story, because Rachel has a story and she shares her story often to give context to what she's saying, whether that's socially or academically. And I think it's really important for everybody to like sit back and think about what their story is along heritage and class and sexuality lines. And I really like how she pushes boundaries in academia. She does not give a fuck along heritage. So like we disagree on femininity a lot and like what forms of femininity are empowering and which ones are just reaffirming the status quo. And, you know, she presents herself as high femme in the classroom and also demands a lot of respect in the classroom. And I think that a lot of people who identify as women or femme, I don't know if they do both all the time. I mean, they should. My images of high femininity when I think about them also include kind of like weak souls, like people who don't stand up for themselves, people who just kind of follow the status quo of what a typical woman should be. And Rachel really messes with that dichotomy and messes with that imagery that we have. But she blows all those stereotypes out of the water and makes you rethink like what you think about people who wear mini skirts and high heels. And I also really admire her ability to pick up new things and try out new things slowly but surely. I think we actually teach each other that. We've kind of pulled each other in certain directions and like were frustrated when the other person didn't really go with them. But in due time, we both come around to each other's ideas. It just takes a minute. And I know I owe her a lot for introducing me to yoga, which is a fine example of what I'm talking about, that she started harping on me like in 2009 about it. And it took me, you know, 4 years to get into a yoga class. But I think the things that we push each other on, even if we don't necessarily change our ways right away, we definitely come around to. I really like how her form of activism and my form of activism are different. And I know put a lot of guilt on ourselves for not doing the right amount of work, whatever that means, but we show each other different ways to show up every day. And I think that really influences us when we're feeling down to do better. The last thing I'll say is, you know, the topic of the point of this whole recording is to, I don't think the point was to be vulnerable, but she is like way more better at being vulnerable than I am. And I look up to her for that. And even though it makes me uncomfortable, I just kind of push through it and it gets easier every time. I don't know, I guess I'm just really happy we're friends, and I love supporting Rachel when she needs support. And she is some, you know, it's hard when you live in a city and then all your friends move away. You know, Rachel was one of those people who got an academic job outside of where I live now. And I've kind of had to come to a realization that just because I don't have good friends in Minneapolis doesn't mean that I don't have friends. It just means that my friends are all over the place, all over the world, all over the country, and that's just what my friendships look like, and that's okay. And I know that Rachel is one of a handful of people that if I'm going through a crisis or I just need somebody to talk to, I can connect with her. And now that I have an iPhone, she's more likely to get back to me because my text messages go to her laptop. I'm joking, of course, but well, I mean, it is true. I have an iPhone and that my text messages go to her laptop, but you know, it's nice to know that she is one of the handful of people that I can call when I need somebody. And sometimes I get really bummed out that I don't have somebody like that here in Minneapolis, but in some ways it represents how strong our friendship has been over the years, that, you know, we've been a long distance friendship for a very long time. Probably more, it's almost going to be more time away than when we lived together in the same city. And I'm definitely closer with her now that we've moved apart spatially. And I'm not really sure why we stayed friends after she moved. I mean, a lot of my friends have moved and friendships just kind of fall to the wayside. But I think for whatever reason, we decided it was worth the effort and we spent a lot of time on the phone with each other. And then once we got that routine going, it was pretty hard to let go of that routine. And, you know, as I get older, I realize that especially maintaining female friendships, I identify as a woman. And so, you know, having other women in my life is really important. And it's like really hard to maintain friendships as adults, especially when people get into longer term relationships and have children and cohabitate and all that normative stuff. it gets really hard to maintain female friendships. And we just decided, without really even talking about it, that we were going to put in the effort to remain friends. And obviously, I'm super glad for that, because now I have this awesome podcast and an amazing academic feminist friend to sound off with. And we influence each other. Our love of chance has blossomed. And it's a pretty dope friendship. I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I'm glad that even when we have fights or disagreements on pretty massive scales, I mean, not in terms of like the amount of yelling, but like what we're actually arguing about is sometimes the roots of our ideologies are different. Our disagreements sometimes are pretty major. And still, we remain friends. And I think those arguments make us, or disagreements make us, stronger as friends and sisters. And the universe decided that we needed to be friends. And when we first met, we thought each other were, I remember we're like, oh, you're so cool. Cause we're like tattooed vegan punks, you know, living in the Midwest. And it was kind of obvious that we were going to be friends. But, you know, the more we got to know each other, obviously different in some aspects, but I'm just really glad that those things didn't break us up the way that smaller disagreements in my life have broken friendships and relationships up. So I don't know. The universe wanted us together for some reason. And I don't even know if the message is clear yet why, but I feel like my love letter here is like very dark, like cynical. Like, we have been fighting for all of these years and yet we remain friends, which is like not the picture I meant to paint. But I think going back to, you know, how I started was things I like about her are the things that we differ on. And it just makes the friendship more unique and vibrant. Yeah, it's just been really fun to have a long distance friendship, and it doesn't seem like laborious or anything. And it helps that we check in every week for the podcast. But, you know, a lot of times we don't even do like a full on, like, how are you doing check-in. We're just recording. It's good to have her in my life, and I'm sure she'll be in my life forever. It'll be exciting to see where things go, obviously. So I love you, Rachel, and sorry that I didn't like say this all directly to you. It's just a vulnerability psych out. So appreciate you being patient with me on that. So we're going to transfer over to Rachel's thing. I'm adding to the Wayne's World thing now. I don't know if that's allowed. I think Rachel's going to be really disappointed in me.
So before I read my letter, I have to announce that this was Mel's idea, this writing love letters to each other thing. I have to say that because I don't know that she ever would have thought that she would suggest such a thing. So thank you, Mel. Your vulnerability is not something I take for granted. Dear Melody, we first met online, on Facebook specifically, when a faculty member at Minnesota connected us because he knew we were both going to be in the next cohort of PhD students and because he thought we had some things in common. We did. I learned that right away when I saw your profile. You were vegan and you were punk. You looked more overtly punk than me, and you were more into bikes than I was, so I was a little nervous you wouldn't think I was as down as you. You probably didn't. But at least you were greeted with pictures of me at protests and probably some photos of Circle A Anarchy sugar cookies I had just made for 4th of July, so I hoped you'd give me a chance. You did. We briefly met at your home in Wisconsin, where you made me tea and showed me the local co-op, and that was it. You'd apartment hunt for us, which I was and still am so appreciative of, and we'd be roommates. And friends, I hoped. We had a mostly good start because we both liked a lot of the same music, and we were driven by radical politics, and we were visibly tattooed, and we were vegan. But I didn't bike as much as you, and when I did, I would bring high heels with me in my bag, which I think you found kind of annoying. And also, I would sometimes wake you up really early, or at least just interrupt your work when I insisted on doing Jillian Michaels exercise DVDs in our tiny living room. And I got Victoria's Secret catalogs in the mail, which I learned from another member of our cohort that you'd sometimes throw in the recycling bin before I had a chance to see them. And I really, really wanted to flush the toilet every time, but I knew that you were irritated when I didn't just let the yellow mellow. And although we mostly continued to manage friendship in spite of those and other minor roommate frustrations, we decided we would live apart after our first year. I think that helped because I think we've gotten closer and closer every year since. We worked together on organizing the Grad Student Union at Minnesota. I gave it a lot, but you gave it almost everything. In fact, you took a staff position with the union while finishing your PhD, and you still finished earlier than most people. You were so committed to the union effort, and I was and still am so inspired by your ability to sacrifice your time for the movement. There are so many examples of that. I feel like I had that ability in my late teens and early 20s to say, fuck everything else, this protest, this phone picking, this whatever is more important than anything else in my life. But as I got older, I felt like I didn't have the energy nor the ability to sustain that. But you still do that. You show up no matter what. And even if there's a period in your life when you feel like you're not doing enough and that you have activist FOMO, you're still doing way more than most people. And I hold you up along with just a small handful of other people as a true activist role model. I love that about you dearly. Soon enough, we started connecting over stuff outside of school and politics and activism. I think basically right around the time we both started therapy, we would start to meet for coffee and talk about stuff that Aquarians don't usually want to talk about. We listened to each other work through relationship highs and relationship ends. We talked about our self-worth in relation to the job market. We talked about anxiety. There was one time in probably the most emotionally intense conversation we've had when you had just gone through a breakup and we were sitting at a coffee shop and you had been fighting back tears through most of our conversation, which is not something that is common. And this dude comes up to us and starts talking about I don't even remember what, and I, as usual, just played nice and nodded and smiled because I'm terrible at shutting down creeps. But you, even in the state you were in, just looked straight at him and said something like, we're in the middle of a conversation, bye. I love your ability to stand up to those little patriarchal moments because although I can do that on paper and in the streets, it's harder for me interpersonally. For that and many other reasons, you are my hero. It was really hard to move away from Minneapolis and not have you, one of my truest best friends, nearby. There's a picture of us hugging at the CC Club on one of my last nights in town that just so sums up how sad I was about leaving. I didn't want to let go. I am incredibly grateful that we've gone out of our way to maintain our friendship over the distance. Even before the podcast, we made time to make at least monthly phone calls and often emailed about pedagogy questions or activist happenings. And since the podcast was born, I honestly feel so lucky it gives us an excuse to talk so often. Emails or phone calls about podcast business never feels burdensome because it means I get to connect with one of my favorite humans on the planet. Mel, you inspire me and you make me want to be a better activist and organizer. You are an excellent ear and confidant, whether it's about work or sex or love, and I mean it when I say that our whole world is so lucky for you. Happy Valentine's Day to my favorite girl. Love, Rachel. Be nice.